This episode of the Memory Palace is brought to you by Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit Progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Support for the Memory Palace comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between. And they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/memory. That's odoo.com/memory.
This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DeMeo. They kept discovering her over and over. Reporters mostly, but historians too, and travelers, exploring what little forest primeval remained in her corner of Massachusetts, who came searching for something ancient and authentic. They came more often as things started heating up in 1920, ahead of the celebrations of the 300th anniversary of the arrival of the Pilgrims in Plymouth. The calendar was filled with events, lectures, monument dedications, choral performances, stuff like that. All culminating during a period in the summer when the tides would be perfect for a naval demonstration and the dramatic arrival of a replica Mayflower. A three-day extravaganza, with parading veterans of World War I, which had just ended a couple of years before, a reenactment of first contact between the Wampanoag and the English, speeches by local dignitaries and by the President of the United States himself, and the unveiling of a statue, a 10-foot-tall Massasoit, the friendly Indian in the Thanksgiving story. A noble savage in bronze by way of Michelangelo's David, muscle-bound and stoic in a loincloth and beads, a single feather in his headband, and a peace pipe cradled in the crook of his arm. They drove up the dirt road until their cars couldn't go anymore, then walked the winding path dappled by sunlight through the shushing pines toward a clearing and the clapboard house, warped and weather-worn at the edge of the water, to call on the princess. The articles and travelogues these visitors would write afterwards all told essentially the same story. Charlotte Mitchell was the last of Massasoit's line, the last living descendant of the great sachem, the king of the Wampanoag people at the time when the Pilgrims settled in a place they decided to call Plymouth. Charlotte Mitchell's great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was the one who got them through that famous first winter and joined them for the first Thanksgiving, and signed a peace treaty that held up fairly well for about 50 years, before totally falling apart. And as a result of those good and useful works, the forefathers of what would become the Commonwealth of Massachusetts set aside a plot of land behind Assawamsett Pond for Massasoit's heirs. It was a small fraction of his former kingdom, which once covered most of southeastern New England. But after his son rebelled against the colonists and was defeated in King Philip's War, the deal was about the best one his descendants might reasonably expect. And so in Lakeville, Massachusetts, right then in 1920, there lived honest-to-goodness royalty, the Princess Wanton Skanuska. She was 72 years old by the time the tercentenary rolled around. She had lived there by the water since her mother Zervia first cleared the land in the 1840s, and since her mother died at the age of 91 just before the turn of the century, and since her sister Melinda, the Princess Tinwilema, had died just a few years before. She had lived there alone. She'd never married, never had kids. And so she ran the small farm by herself, and she made baskets woven from ryegrass, all sizes, sometimes impossibly small, and sold them at markets and to the tourists who came by looking to meet a princess. The articles would always note that she dressed like anyone else from Lakeville, but said that her sister had nearly always worn the traditional clothes of the Wampanoag, and the beads and a crown of feathers, befitting her royal status. She wore it to court time and again, to challenge a neighbor who was infringing on their water rights, or another who was telling the sisters they couldn't cut firewood in a part of the forest that had belonged to their family for centuries, and to demand a pension worthy of their positions, worthy of the debt Americans owed to their ancestor. She won those cases, and the state did award the princesses an annuity of $300 a year. But that was nothing, even then. And when the newspaper men would come to write up their various human interest stories with ready-made headlines, real-life royalty right here in America. They'd point that out with varying degrees of outrage. Here was a living link to the Thanksgiving story. Here was the heir to Massasoit, who'd made peace with the pilgrims, who showed them how to live on this new continent, whose act of famous selflessness, whose decision to welcome outsiders and live beside them in harmony, helped make America possible, helped make the very idea of America possible. Shouldn't Princess Wantanskanuska have more than $300 a year? Shouldn't her kingdom be more than a broke-down shack by a pond on a few meager acres? In one article, written the year before the big anniversary celebrations, a writer from the Boston Sunday Post asked how she was going to feel when they unveiled the statue of her beloved ancestor. She came back with a question of her own. What does it mean? What is this idealized Indian statue for? And the reporter's taken aback. He'd never quite thought about it. He said he figured it was a sign of respect for a brave and generous and trustworthy man. A sign of gratitude. Gratitude? She asked. And then she took out an object. A woven basket so small, it kind of blew the guy's mind. He said it was an eighth of an inch high and 3/16 of an inch long. And she pointed to it in the palm of her hand. And she said, that basket would hold all of Massachusetts' gratitude to Massasoit. There were Boy Scouts, there were Girl Scouts. There were bands from local schools and military regiments brought over from England. There were senators, a couple of governors. There were sails in the harbor on a perfect summer day. 100,000 people, give or take, in Plymouth. A small town built on a hill by the rock that someone claimed with no particular evidence was the spot where the pilgrims landed. They had to station police by it around the clock in the run-up to the celebration. They kept catching people trying to chip off souvenirs. There were members of the Portuguese Club, members of the Hibernian Club, marching along with members of the Young Women's Hebrew Association. Naval warships thundered salutes. President Harding made a speech about America and the spirit of inclusivity and cooperation that defined it, and that was born right there in Plymouth, lo, those centuries ago. And the words rang true for so many. People who had recently sent their sons and husbands off to fight in the Great War, to sort out disputes between nations who just weren't American enough, it seemed on that day, to live side by side in peace, like the pilgrims and the Wampanoag. There was a pageant, a celebration of scenes from the familiar, semi-true tale of the early days of the colony, women and men and children playing pilgrims. And there were Indians there too, but they were imported from Maine. There were plenty of Wampanoag still living in and around Plymouth, but they refused to participate. But later, when it came time to unveil the statue of Massasoit, hidden beneath an American flag, Charlotte Mitchell was there. The Princess Wantanskanuska had agreed to attend. Sometime after the event, not long before she died and the land was ceded to two of her cousins who lived out of town and then didn't keep up on the taxes and the last of Massasoit's land became property of the state, she told another reporter who made the journey out to find her that the anniversary and her role in it was a farce. She said she was only doing a favor for a friend, the head of the Daughters of the American Revolution, but she didn't like doing it. Why should I have any joy in helping to celebrate the landing of the men who wiped out my people? She said, and told of how that same friend rode her up the street in the monkey cart and took her to see the president. She said she told Harding that she was there to meet him, the person, not to celebrate, she said, the wiping out of the Indians by the white man. She said, why should I have been dragged to Plymouth to celebrate such an event? Massasoit, my grandfather 8 times removed, should have killed the so-called pilgrims instead of helping them. The 10-foot-tall statue is supposed to depict the very moment when Massasoit stood on the shores and watched the Mayflower approaching. It's a moment that didn't actually happen, but that's the way these things usually go. There are copies of the statue all over the country, including one in front of the state capitol in Utah. He didn't watch the Mayflower sail there either. But the original still stands looking out over Plymouth Harbor. And if you go there, You can picture Charlotte Mitchell. Picture Princess Wontonskanuska standing in its shadow. On the first day of fall in 1921, she is dressed in the clothes, the beads, the crown of feathers that her sister always used to wear before she died and left her alone. She is wishing she didn't agree to come. And when she is told it is time, as the guest of honor, she takes hold of the American flag covering her ancestor and pulls it down. This episode of The Memory Palace is written and produced and whatnot by me, Nate DeMeo, with engineering assistance from Elizabeth Aubert, and research assistance, which was invaluable, really, on this one, from Eliza McGraw. This show is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which gets ad-serving technology from AdZerk and financial support from you guys, our listeners. The ad music is composed for Radiotopia by J.D. Sampson. If you have a Memory Palace fan on your holiday shopping list, and who doesn't? I mean, come on. Go to memorypalace.us and buy them a t-shirt. What more could a person want? You can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at The Memory Palace. You can send me love letters and hate mail through themorypalace.us. Just click on contact. And we'll see you guys next time.
Radiotopia.